And okay, we are live. Hey, everybody, welcome to Pro Photo Show episode 94. It's been a little while, but we are back. We got lots of things to talk about. We got a small panel, but I think we're going to dig in and have a bit of fun this week. We got Barry Howell, we got Mark Teske, and of course, myself, Gavin Syme, on this week's Pro Photo Show for September the 19th, 2013. Let's roll this thing.
Welcome to Pro Photo Show, the resource for professional and enthusiast photographers, a member of the Blueberry Network and the Tech Podcast Network. For show notes, tips, forums, and more, visit us online at profotoshow.net.
All right, here we are, and we've got a fun little panel. Everybody, I can see your video, I can hear your audio, people get to look at my beautiful face and hear all of our dulcet tones if they're tuning in live. If you're tuning into the podcast later, just listen for those smooth Mark and Barry tones, those old experienced radio voices. And I'm over here trying to fake it. So, hey, Mark, good to have you on board. Glad you're here.
Great to be back again, Gavin. Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to be on the Pro Photo Show. And hopefully this time I'm not looking quite as orange as I did last time. I figured after my fourth appearance on here, I might be back. So I upgraded my webcam this time around.
And you are looking pretty dang good there. What's your new webcam?
The Logitech C920.
Okay, that's actually what I have too. So I guess that's why we both look so stinking good. And another one from Minnesota, Mr. B. Howell. Hello, Barry.
Greetings.
With a name like Howell, you must have a yacht. Like, is your secret life, like on the weekends, you go out to the Great Lakes and you have like a 60-foot yacht and you like filled with gold, like the seats are made of gold and you fish for fish, I suppose is what you fish for off the side of the boat with a golden fishing pole because the gold is so sensitive to the tug of the fish.
Well, if only it were that simple. Is it? At least my brother's nickname is Thurston, so.
That's pretty funny. So,
about it.
Well, it's the Minnesota crew and the Washington crew. I don't know what it is about you Minnesotans, but you always show up for podcasts. And I can't ignore a thing like that because when you got people trying to listen in, you need that. Let's roll on this one. Let's start this week with a bit of news and reviews and whatever we can come up with, and then we're going to have some fun topics of the month talking about fall and falling and other stuff. So we're going to do that. But first, news. Mark, I know you had a few things that you had emailed me about, and I'm all for letting you take point on that. First of all, I should throw in here that this week's episode is brought to you by Power Workflow 4, the world's most powerful Lightroom presets, guaranteed. And you can check those out over at simeffects.com/PW, simeffects.com/PW. Use your promo code PPS to get a special listener discount on those. And you're going to like what you see. Go over, check out the video and take a look at those. And now with the news, let's go to Mark Teske and have him start it off, talk about a few things of note.
Why, thank you, Gavin, in the news today. First up, there hasn't really been a lot in the way of new cameras that have come out lately, so I'm going to kind of gloss over that, but there has been an unbelievable amount of Adobe news in the past couple of weeks, a topic which I'm sure will inspire some controversial discussion. But what's interesting about it is caught a headline yesterday stating that Adobe has now exceeded 1 million subscribers to Creative Cloud, far beating expectations, and as a result, their stock went up about $5 on the spot. So at least as far as Adobe's concerned, they and the stock market are considering a Creative Cloud to be a big success thus far.
Now, okay, let me just throw this in, and you guys tell me what you think, because obviously you guys have heard me. I'm not a big fan of the whole Creative Cloud and the things Adobe does in general lately, and there's a lot of that feeling. But admittedly, Creative Cloud is offering some good values. I just don't like the whole being locked in thing. My question is, I keep seeing Adobe coming back. They're lowering the price. They're always doing incentives. Come to Photoshop World and get a year for free. What I see from Adobe is desperation. People not really jumping on board with Creative Cloud. Otherwise, you don't keep lowering the price. You don't keep giving it away for free. And to me, you know, like, okay, 1 million people, that sounds like a lot. I don't know if that's really that many for a company like Adobe compared to how many people upgrade. I honestly don't know that. It sounds to me like, oh, let's do marketing spin and say, oh, we've exceeded all expectations. I don't see the actions of a company that's exceeded all expectations with this product. And well, maybe I'm crazy, but
Yeah, I think the most interesting part about that is that their stock going up $5. And
couldn't that be just because it was they spun it that way though? They got on the PR side of it and they said, "Hey, let's act like it's really going great."
I think so, but you also have people that are looking at their real financial numbers, and if you're seeing a sharp uptick in their finances per month, whether it's, you know, a million or 10 subscribers, if their finances are up, and that's going to cause a rise in the market. So, you know, that number's pretty hard to fake.
I don't know. Barry, what do you think about all this?
Well, it's taken me a while, but I'm starting to come around to the fact that I think the Creative Cloud has some value. I just jumped on the Creative Cloud with Premiere this week, and you know I've talked to Gavin a little bit with you about this little project that I'm taking on, where I need to be utilizing Premiere and working with a client that already is on the Creative Cloud and has Premiere.
Yeah.
Well, I mean this job's going to pay okay, but it's not going to pay enough where I could justify going and buying it off the shelf for $900 or whatever. So to jump on for 20 or 30 bucks a month, it's a great value just to jump into the pool. I like some of the ability to sync settings across the cloud, especially with a project like the one I'm doing on a consulting basis, where I'll be able to work with Premiere on my machine, sync settings to the host machine that's at the site where this project is being developed. There's some real advantage and some value to that. So, I would agree with Mark that when it comes to financials and stock market related activity, very little happens anymore because of good spin. That day is long since passed. Now with the second to second financials available on companies, and the stock market looks at price earning ratios and looks at revenue and looks at projections and target kind of stock price numbers. Those aren't fabricated. Those aren't blowing in the wind kind of numbers anymore.
Yeah.
And so I understand where you're coming from, Gavin, but the market, I understand also why the market says, wow, look at Adobe. They might be onto something, because the one thing we can't deny is that every time they sign somebody up for the cloud, what does that cost them? Virtually nothing. An automated download process.
Oh, it's huge for them.
Right. They don't have to. And that's what the market sees. They're not spending any money printing disks, manuals, boxes, packaging, shipping, any of that. It's just you instantly have the software.
Keep in mind, too,
that's a million in 3 months. That's not, that's a
right.
pretty
yeah,
short
I
horizon.
Know. But they're also, I'm seeing, I don't know. I see spin is what I see. And to say that, spin doesn't work, for heaven's sake, have you seen the people running our country in the news media lately? We got spin everywhere, and they do use it. So I'm not saying that is all that's happening at Adobe. I just feel like, gosh, they're not really doing that great with this. I know they're making a ton of money. I just don't know what's a ton of money for Adobe.
Just do the math. 1 million times $50 per month times 3 months. They've already pulled in $150 million.
Yes, but how does that compare, though, to what they would have pulled in previously on a release? See, I have no idea.
Sure.
I think ultimately the idea of cloud for them is great. I think we're seeing a huge amount of resistance because they're not really giving people what they want. I think really people expect Adobe to hose them, because that's what Adobe does, is they hose us.
Well, that's a great segue. That's a great segue to my second bit of news, is that to make sure that they're not hosing people, and if this is a hosing, I think most people would like to be hosed this way. They announced a new bundle of $9.95 a month for Photoshop plus Lightroom.
Right.
Which, so there was a lot of people resisting spending $50 a month for Creative Cloud, and there was other people resisting the $20 per month for just Photoshop. So Adobe said, okay, photographers, fine. $9.95 Photoshop plus Lightroom. And, that one's pretty hard to get upset about.
Well, yeah, it's hard. I have to admit, it's a value. If you look at what Photoshop costs, what Lightroom costs, how many years you would have to do, even if you didn't upgrade every version. Yeah, that's a good deal if it stays that price. So my issue with cloud isn't, and honestly has never been so much about the price, so much as being locked in. And I think, frankly, that's most people's. If Adobe said, hey, the version that you start on, once you've met this number of subscription, you fulfill once you've done it for a year or 2 years, you can own that version that you started on. Even if you disconnect from the service, if there was some kind of thing where you had something to show for it at the end. There's a reason that we hate renting. I don't want to rent my house. I don't want to rent my car. And as I've said from the beginning, I'm not saying I won't get on board, because it seems like they're kind of foisting this on us and there's really going to be no option and there's not much for competition out there. I don't really want to rent my software. I can see the value proposition, but you know, I'm just looking at the other side. Call me a conspiracy theorist, I guess. Maybe I just don't go for this stuff too easy, but I may have to come around. I may not have a choice.
Well, the other thing, Gavin, is I think it's a smart move on their part, because it certainly makes it probably causes people to be less likely to steal the software and pirate it.
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh,
I guess certainly. Maybe. Yeah.
Oh, Gavin, for sure. Absolutely. It's the same thing. That's why iTunes became so wildly successful in music, because they were the first company that didn't treat all their customers like thieves. They said, you want a song? It's 99 cents. Why bother to steal it for 99 cents? So I think it's a brilliant move on their part, because look at all the people that are running pirated versions of Photoshop or Lightroom, because they could never, not so much Lightroom, but Photoshop was always an expensive buy, you know, up front. So I don't know. I think the jury's out. Let's see how it plays out. I don't know how the updating thing. I got it while I was out at a school doing a shoot tonight, and I was on Wi-Fi. I had something pop up about an update for Premiere CC, and it just popped up on my screen. Then when I went to look later, it's like, well, do I have to like install an update? I think it just did it automatically. So I guess that's good.
I guess, yeah, we'll just see what happens. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying I'll ever try it. I guess I'm kind of the clown on this one. So, you know, I'm outnumbered. So it is
what
it
is.
We'll see. I mean, maybe I'll come around in time. But let's move on. Mark, what else you got? I know you had a few other tidbits you wanted to shout out.
I've got one. Well, not to beat the Adobe thing into the ground. The other thing that I do have one more Adobe piece of news here. Well, the other thing that they promised with Adobe Creative Cloud is it would allow them, because everything is not disk-based and so forth, that they promised that they would have a lot, they would not just bug update from year to year, that they would actually feature update regularly. And thus far they're doing I got to give them an A on keeping up with that one, because they've announced three really big revisions over the past month to their flagship applications. For example, like Photoshop 14.1 was just released. Kind of the big ticket items there were improvements in shake reduction.
Right.
A new tool that if you're a web developer allows you to automatically save off the layers as different slices, which is very important if you're doing a web page.
Okay.
And then, alongside of that came with a new version of Photoshop Lightroom. Version 5.2,
right,
which included probably the coolest thing in there is that it now has lens profiles for the GoPro, so it'll kind of de-distort all the GoPro, both video and photo footage.
Video and photo. That's interesting. That's pretty cool.
Also, they've got they've changed the spot fill tool so that it will do feathering as well as just a hard line.
Right.
So that's a cool new feature. And then they've announced that Premiere Pro will have a new update in October. That has actually way too many things to list today, but probably the thing I'm most interested in is seamless integration with SpeedGrade. And for those not in the video world, SpeedGrade is a tool that gives you a lot more control over your colorizing than just using the Fast Color Corrector tool. And you can integrate with that tool now, but it's a very lengthy, painful export process, whereas the new version will just link the file directly and open it up instantly, and that's going to be a huge boon to anybody that wants to do powerful color correction.
Right. Well, I mean, you got to give it to them on the sense of, you know, that we are seeing new features and some pretty cool stuff coming out. So what do you say?
Well, and what will be interesting to me is to see if in the future they're more responsive with camera plug-in, air quote, type things, you know, for when that new Canon, that new Nikon comes out. Look how often we've been sitting there twiddling our thumbs for a month or two until Lightroom gets the patch or the plug-in so the latest camera works. I'll be impressed if they can tighten that schedule down. So new camera comes out, bam, the update's there, and we can start using the software with their new camera.
Yeah, there are advantages to the whole subscription model, because there's none of this, oh, you have to buy, you know, the new version to get this, because they're trying to find ways to get us to upgrade. It's just there's disadvantages, too. So we'll see what happens. It's fascinating. Mark, did you have any other particular things in the news that you wanted to hit on?
I did. Another thing for those of us that are Canon shooters, and Barry, I believe you're a Nikon guy, right?
I am, but it's okay. I like you anyway.
This is actually an upgrade to the Canon Professional Services policy, and their services have changed kind of their whole what they're offering this fall. And to something that's, I think, actually going to be an even more interesting program.
Right.
The biggest thing they've done, and so they had a whole list of changes to the program. One is that they're chopping the prices of the Platinum, the highest level of service, from $500 down to $300.
Okay.
Which, that's a pretty major change. Gold is still going to be the same at $100. And silver, well, it's hard to discount free, so. but for the hardcore pros, I mean, you're getting a straight up $200 price reduction for no penalty.
That's
so that's
cool.
hard to beat. They are now including additional cleans and tunes. Before, I think you got like 3 at the gold, and now you get 6.
Nice.
And at platinum, you go from 5 to 10, so you get a much larger number, and you no longer have to have the little coupon vouchers that you had to before. They just keep track of it online in your account. You just mail it in, and they debit your account. So you don't have to worry about the coupons anymore. And the third thing that I think is going to be big for both you and me is they've now included the C100 as a qualifying camera in there, and that's now also under that cleanup, tune-up kind of thing. So
Yeah, because I couldn't add mine before, it seems like. I went to add it in there.
No.
And I just have a silver, but still, I wanted to put it in there and didn't have a way to do it.
Yeah, so they've now included the cinema cameras as part of CPS as well. So.
I would hope so, considering what they cost us.
Now, the only downside of this whole thing is the demos used to be a 2-week period of time. They've dropped the time frame for demos down to 1 week. So,
for
like if you're going to check out a
lens
or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
You now only can have that for a week. So those 10 day trip
still pretty good.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I like to do like a 10-day trip to Europe, and it's really nice.
You had a way to get in.
That's now just a little bit too long. Oh,
very cool. Well, I'm sure you got – I know there's probably a couple more things. Let me throw in a couple things, and then I'll let you and Barry, if you have anything too. First of all, I want to give a new shout-out of my own. I got a couple things that have been going on that are big projects. Since the last podcast released the new version of Power Workflow, the kind of go-to everything Lightroom preset – collection that we've been making ever since Lightroom 1, actually. So we're at version 4 now. Huge update. Everything kind of rebuilt from the ground up to take advantage of Lightroom 4 and 5's process versions. And, you know, these things are good. We're really proud of these, and we're calling them the world's most powerful Lightroom presets, and we stand behind that. If you don't like them, you can return them. And we haven't had a single return yet, and we've been moving quite a few. We've had a lot of upgrades, and basically just a general purpose workflow kit for anybody in Lightroom, for everything from dynamic range to batch correction to color to black and white to sharpening, all that kind of stuff. And we've done well with that collection over the years, and we put a lot into it. So you can check that out over at simeffects.com. One more news bit, and I don't want to turn this into a Gavin show, but we've had a huge project we've been working on for like 9 months. We just launched it as a Kickstarter project, and it's called the Speed Cinema. This is more on the video side, but it's also going to be great for time lapse and things like that. Essentially, what we've done is we've, from the ground up, built a camera dolly rail slider system. It's a reconfigurable system that you can set up as a compact rail. You can set up as a ride-on platform, as a tripod dolly. It's got these wheel bases and these modules, and everything kind of reconfigures. And it all rides on top of this really cool rail we designed that's called Speed Tube. And it's these interconnecting rail tubes. And this is kind of what's huge about this. Most rails don't have a solution for really being portable. If you want a 10-foot rail, you know, you got to either go to the hardware store and buy a pipe when you get to where you're going and drag it up into the hills, or you have to have something that's 2-3 foot, or you have to have a couple guys carry something big up there. Some of the big cinema dollies just get really heavy and bulky. This is just a tube that just snaps together. It's an aluminum tube, and we've put a lot of engineering effort into it. It's going to be pretty cool, and it makes this whole system portable, so you can take it anywhere for doing video, time-lapse, that kind of stuff. So anyways, I'll link it in the show notes. It's on the Kickstarter. There's a blog post about it on Pro Photo Show on Sime Effects, and if you have any questions about that or anything related to the show, shoot me an email, profotoshow@gmail.com. But I ask you to go and check out. Please take a look at what we've done. Even if you don't need a rail like this, if you could go check it out, and if Pro Photo Show is useful, go over and take a look at that. Share it with your friends. It's getting off to a little bit of a slow start. We're trying to get the word off. We need to make that $25,000 mark on Kickstarter to really get enough pre-orders to ramp up production and get this thing going. So please take a look at the Speed Cinema and spread the word. We'd really appreciate it. It's been a lot of work going into this, and we're pretty excited about it. So, with that, Barry, any news things that you want to shout out on?
Yep, just two things that come to mind. I'll give a quick little Nikon shout out here.
Shout out.
Nikon Yep, exactly. Nikon has announced that the D600 and the D5200 are now kind of off the product line. So there will be some discounts on those forthcoming. There is expected to be a D5300,
okay,
which is a crop sensor, you know, consumer level type camera with who knows. The rumor there is that they may be adding Wi-Fi and GPS capabilities for a very, very inexpensive camera, which would be interesting.
Right,
and then the the D600 will be replaced with the D610. There's okay. not there. Frankly, nobody really knows, but it's not expected that there will be any significant feature changes to that camera. But as you may know, some of you heard the D600 was somewhat maligned out of the gate with having a problem with some D600 suffered from some oil spots on the sensor.
Okay.
That you know, Nikon, you know, kind of looked the other way at first, and then they finally got to the point where they said, oh, all right, this must be a significant thing. And people, if they had to send their camera, and they seem to take care of everybody. I got a D600. I've never had the oil spot problem. And the D600 now is down to, I think it's 1996. It's a 24-megapixel full-frame camera with shoots great video, and, I mean, it's a great value now for under $2,000. It's again, I don't know whether we go to laugh or cry at that point.
Yeah, well, okay, I have to poke a little fun here because of the Canon lens issue that I still get emails from people about all the time that are angry. And if the oil spotting issue was on Canon, they would say, well, you shouldn't be cooking next to the camera. And you say, I wasn't. And they'd be like, yeah, yes, you were. No, I've been getting emails from people recently where they brought this up to Canon, and Canon like was calling them a liar, saying that the lens can't fall off. And this other, I'm getting these irate emails. So it's good to see that Nikon, props to them for manning up and taking care of it. Very cool.
Well, they had to. They were getting roasted pretty bad over it. So I don't think that. I think they're just going to call the new model number just so they can put that in the rearview mirror and, you know, that'll be a done deal. You know, and who knows? I mean, there's always rumors of another lower-end full-frame camera coming out, and, you know, who knows what's going on. It appears that they're making some noise in probably some kind of a significant update to their mirrorless camera line. And mirrorless is something we've talked about before, and it's one of those, you know, it's sooner or later it's going to become, I think, a bigger piece of our reality. But for now, I think it's just still kind of lurks out there in the background. And then the other thing that I just learned about today, and I even brought a prop. Okay, this is, you don't get her as the prop, but this Kodak now has a metallic inkjet paper. And you know, obviously this is hard to see on a webcam, but this sample looks really, really nice. I'm going to get a test roll in here very shortly. It looks about, and I've worked with a lot of metallic prints, it looks to be about, I would say, 80% as metallic as those wow metallic prints you get from the various labs that kick them out.
Right.
But inkjet, no different inks. The sample looks stunning. And so I'm anxious to try it. It's not going to be right for every image, but I'm looking for something to try and kind of pump up. High school seniors no longer even care about buying wallets anymore. Well, maybe a metallic wallet that we can produce in-house and do something really cool with, maybe that will be attractive. Maybe certain images, it will be an upgrade path for an extra $50 or $100 maybe somebody will spend.
Let me pose this question, though, and you sell a lot of volume and you've seen a lot of the print stuff over the years.
Yep.
Is, you know, I know there's a couple companies making metallic. And personally, even aside from inkjet, I kind of quit using metallic because while it does look great on some images, other images it kind of doesn't. And I kind of got tired of it. Is something like that really going to help? I mean, isn't that kind of a boat that's already sailed in terms of metallic, or do you think that it can, you know, it's something that can give an edge?
Well, I think it's something that can be an edge. For me, it's something that can be an edge because I can produce it in-house. And as you know, we produce virtually everything in-house. I mean, the only reason I can do this podcast in an evening sitting here is because that Epson printer behind me isn't printing necessarily at night. There's about 4 or 5 months a year where that goes almost 24 hours a day.
Wow.
But and then it's so loud that I wouldn't be sitting here doing that. But the fact that I could potentially have a roll of metallic paper for specialty products, specialty prints, some of the nature, some of the scenic, some of the baseball parks, some of those images that just give them a little extra pop, I think it maybe gives me some things that I can sell a little different. So, any event, we'll see. I'll let you know. Maybe by the time we do the next show, I'll have gotten my role. And
yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Let us know. And what's the? Is it just called Kodak Metallic Inkjet, or is there a name for it? Or
it's called Kodak Professional Inkjet Photo Paper Metallic, and it is about twice the price of the non-metallic rolls.
Since we're on the paper bandwagon, I've been talking to the folks a bit over at Breathing Color, and I've got some sample rolls of some stuff that I've been looking at from them, and then I'm going to take a look. It's just been crazy with, you know, the Kickstarter project and releases and all that kind of stuff, but they seem to have some really neat-looking stuff, too, and the same with Canson Infinity. They've got some neat stuff. I've mentioned their papers before on the podcast, and more of us are getting into printing our own. I mean, there's various advantages that we've talked about before, so some brands to take a look at that seem to have some good stuff and really nice luster paper. I'm going to try. It doesn't look like it's so different from the luster papers, but it's heavy, it's durable, and it's a very good price point. So I'm going to play with that. And that was Breathing Colors luster that I was talking about in that case. So with that, let's move on. Mark, Barry, did you have another one?
Yep. I'm just going to throw one more thing in there. Yep. And we're not making this a phone show, but one of the things about the new iPhone that I was really intrigued by was this multicolored flash, this secondary flash.
Awesome.
It's like, and all I could think about was, again, I know Gavin, I know your attitude about, you know, mobile phone cameras and all of that. But think about it in this sense. Why didn't somebody think of this before? It's such a simple concept, because you know how terrible point and shoot camera, cell phone camera flash pictures look in darker in your house, it's somewhere at an event, in a restaurant, in a bar, and it's just that blasted awful yuck.
Right.
It's a brilliant thought to just simply mix a little bit of warm light in there. I just think it's really interesting that it took a technology company in working with a cell phone, you know, with you know, the infamous $5 camera in their in their phone to go, hey, this is a good idea. And if it works like they say, it's a great concept.
I never find the flash in the mobiles powerful enough. I mean, I almost just try and hold it more steady, because every time I use the flash, I feel like it makes it look terrible.
Right.
But
that too is one of the more interesting things about the new iPhone. And I originally had a clear calendar on Friday and fully intended to go line up to get myself a 5S on Friday morning. And then I got a video shoot walkthrough scheduled for 10 a.m. So I'm still going to try to get down there first thing in the morning. I don't need it, but hey, what the heck?
Well,
get
now they've
first,
got
get
their,
on my block.
The main thing I heard about was that they're beautifully unapologetically plastic now.
Yeah, well, that's the 5C. The 5S is
that's not. The one that I, you know, but leave it. Apple is like the king of like taking something that's completely mundane and ordinary and acting like it's just incredibly extraordinary. It's just kind of funny. Yeah. And I like my iPhone, but I'm calling my Speed Cinema beautiful unapologetically aluminum.
There you go.
Well, so what's cool about the 5S and the other thing besides the two color flash that it's adding to it is it's adding the ability to, you know, when you take a picture, it's actually taking a couple dozen pictures, and because there's so much processing horsepower in that, it's actually selecting the one that it believes is the least blurry.
Right.
So even if you're moving around quite a bit, if you've got just a millisecond that you're not moving there, and that thing has a 10 frame per second buffer, you know, it can capture literally 10 frames a second until the memory is full.
Right.
So it literally sits there and waits till it gets the perfect image and stops on that one. So, you know, those two things together are going to make your average iPhone snapshot, the quality, go up real dramatically. I mean, that's a big benefit to your average shooter.
Yep. And the fact that they, I'm glad they didn't chase the megapixel horse down, you know, that lane.
Yep. Bigger image cells.
Right. Larger sensor, bigger pixels. That makes more sense. I talked to somebody who got one of the 41 megapixel Samsung cameras and returned it. Because they just found that while the pictures were pretty cool and pretty good, I mean, 41 megapixels isn't, you know, is hard to, but realistically, it had a very slow buffer rate and it was just difficult. They just said it wasn't a fun camera to use.
Now, what about the 40 megapixel Nokia? Was that the one you're talking about, or are we talking about
Nokia? I guess, whatever.
Okay.
Whatever, the 41 megapixel one. They saw they saw the TV commercial, they bought it, they used it for a few days and said, you know, yeah, the pictures I think are better, but they're not noticeably better than what we got on our other phones, and so they're just going to return it and get something different.
I did see some image samples from that, and I was, as mobiles go, you know, I'm not a big fan of mobiles for serious work, but it did have resolution. I mean, it was detail there. I would still never use it for anything serious, because 46 megapixels on a camera is still not even close to 20 on an SLR, but it was pretty, I thought it was neat for a mobile, but a lot of times, you know, that's overlooked, especially in the consumer grade stuff. You know, they play the game of big megapixels and this or that, but how does the camera work in the field? How does it work in practice? You know,
correct. I mean,
theoretically, eventually I'm sure we'll see really high quality cameras in mobiles, but there's also the usability, the functionality, and what you can actually do with it. But very cool.
Well, and the built-in slow motion video capability is intriguing, especially for, you know, for filmmakers on the fly. That's pretty interesting. So we'll see, you know,
right.
Just keeps, I guess, keeps changing. And there we go.
I believe it'll do 120 frames per second at 720p, I think is what it's rated at, which is
the Hero 3
amazing.
Will do that. Hero 3 yep. Black will do that too at 720, but I always shoot at 1080, but it'll do 60 at 1080. I use the Hero 3 Black. I'm still, you know, it's had its quirks and they definitely had some launch issues with that, but mine has actually worked pretty well. And I use it for quite a bit of B-roll footage working on like the Photographics miniseries we're putting together and things like that. It works good. Okay, moving on from phones, and let's real quick kind of wrap up this news pretty soon. I just want to shout out on this one. I thought it was an interesting article that Kodak is now out of their Chapter 11 bankruptcy court proceedings, I guess. And basically, I guess what this means is they're free to kind of move forward and do things again.
But did you see what they're going to specialize in?
It looked like it says something about movie film and packaging.
No, I think you're reading something.
I'm looking
different.
In the Gadget article. What did you see?
Well, I saw something right out of Rochester, New York when they first made the announcement, and it seemed anyway right out of the gate their trump card was they were really going to specialize and concentrate on digital business office solutions.
Let's see. Now, according to this article, they offloaded its document and personal imaging groups.
So this is different. Not that. No, this is digital imaging for businesses, not copiers. Not that.
Okay.
Nobody really knows what that means, but that's Kodak.
Okay, well, that's Kodak's always been. It's just amazing to see how things can change over the years. We'll see where they go, and I just hope they keep making film. That's the main thing. That's the Kodak thing that I actually care about. So they do make some great film. The other thing is the International Photography Hall of Fame, which a lot of you may not know about this organization, but it's a good one to check into. They're opening their new museum, and it's in, oh gosh, where's their new one? They had one and then it closed and now they're opening a new one. I think this one's in St. Louis, but this is something to look into. I mean, first of all, basically their goal is kind of preserving the history of photography and all that kind of stuff, which is really cool. But this museum is going to be cool. I mean, they'll have these grand images from all eras, you know, all the way from, you know, your old prints and classic techniques all the way to these huge, massive prints on the wall. Actually, Kim Whitmire, my mentor, he has an image that was hanging and probably still is hanging in the Hall of Fame that he actually did for their centennial, I think it was. And it's like 26 feet or something done on this panoramic camera. I mean, they do some pretty epic stuff there, and there's a lot of history and a lot of neat stuff that they're working on. I'll link it in the show notes. But if you're down that way, check it out. And also look at joining them because they're doing a neat thing. And if you're a member, they send you a quarterly magazine and stuff like that. But I was excited to see that they were opening an actual physical space museum again, and I hope to get down that way and see what they got going. Anyways,
Gavin, just to close out the Kodak conversation, here's a newsletter, because I has being a former employee of a division of Kodak, I still get some of these little newsletters that pop in on occasion.
Right.
And this was September 3rd from the CEO Perez. Kodak, what's next starts now. It says Kodak emerges as a technology company focused on imaging for business. And just listen to this. Tell me what this means. Mark, you're a smart guy. You figure this out. We have emerged as a technology company serving imaging for business markets, including packaging, functional printing, graphic communications, and professional services. We have been revitalized by our transformation and restructured to become a formidable competitor, leaner and with a strong capital structure, a healthy balance sheet, and the industry's best technology. So there you go. Welcome back, Kodak.
Well,
sounds to me like they're launching Kinko's.
Yeah.
First of all, yeah, the new Kodak copy centers are going to be the bomb.
That's what it sounds like, totally. You know, and they're talking about professional services and business imaging. I mean, doesn't that sound like an imaging center?
What kind of professional services are they going to offer is the question. Yeah, we'll see. It's you'd think I'd have some kind of a quirky like rebuttal to that, Barry, but I just my mind's still really trying to get around what they said.
Well, Look for them on Kickstarter soon.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Okay, Mark, did you have anything else?
Not for this segment, no.
Okay, well, let us move on into other segments then. We actually had surprisingly a lot of news. I guess it's been a while. I apologize for taking so long. It's just been a crazy summer for pretty much all of us, I think. And got to keep those bills paid, keep food on the table. Otherwise, the kids are not happy. So with that, let's move on into kind of our topic of the month, which is fall and other stuff. If you can tell me what that means, Barry. I mean, pretty generic there. So I do want to have a quick discussion, and let's try not to turn this into a rat hole, because you know how I can be and how all of us can be. I'm not going to take all the blame. We had a interesting article in between the last show and now that I posted on Pro Photo Show called "As of Today, I Am No Longer a Photographer." And honestly, you know, I have to bring this up because no article on Pro Photo Show ever has gotten this many likes, this many shares, this much interaction. So if nothing else, I had some link bait going on there. But the premise of basically this article, long story short, and I'll link it in the show notes so you can read it because I think it's good. The premise is essentially, as someone who's trying to sell wall portraits, who's trying to focus on more of a wall decor, I'm trying to build the portraits, pictorials, and those kind of things to something more than just, oh, you take photos, whatever. And what I'm getting at with this whole article is not that I no longer take photos, it's that I'm no longer a photographer because the word has kind of become meaningless. I don't go out to people anymore and say I'm a photographer because when I say that, it's irrelevant to them. They don't care. How they generally respond is, yeah, so is my nephew. He's four. You know, something along those lines. And it doesn't have relevance. So I haven't used that term actively for some time. You know, the side of my truck says American Pictorialist, and we've talked how that works good, and people come up to me, and they ask the questions, and they talk to me, and they're more interested, and I explain my process, and that I do wall prints, and all this stuff. All I've really done is I was kind of reinforcing my mindset on this, and going back and saying, you know what, I'm done using the term photographer. I make wall decor. And if you go through this article, it's more than just a name change. You can't just change your name and say, oh, I'm going to call myself something different, and suddenly you're a different person. But branding and also affecting the mindset of how you see your work. When I started doing my wall portraits and really emphasizing that, I started seeing images entirely different. And that's basically all I want to focus on in terms of the images I sell, is that wall decor kind of aspect. And It's been an interesting road. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. And I think that, at least for now, the term photography does not have a lot of meaning to people. And I think it bears thinking about in terms of how we brand ourselves. You don't go to a high-end restaurant and say, you know, they don't call their chef a fry cook. They call him a chef. And a chef cooks, but he's not probably going to be very happy if he's just called a cook. You know, he's not the same as the guy that works at McDonald's. He has more training, he's making a higher end product, and he's building that brand. Hemingway didn't call himself a typist. There's considerations, I think, in how we brand, but also in how we perceive our work and how we value it ourselves. And that was kind of the context of this article. Some people called me an idiot. Many people actually agreed with me. And it was a fascinating article. I'll link it in the show notes. You guys, do you have anything to add to this? I mean, I'm not going to read the whole article. I don't want to go on and on all day about it, but it was a fun one because we got a lot of interaction on this.
Well, I mean, you and I have talked about this a little bit too. Clearly the profession is taking on water, not because there are too many bad photographers. It's just there's too many bad photographers calling themselves professional photographers. There have been bad photographers since, you know, the beginning of, you know, photography.
Right.
But now we have a lot of potential. We have a lot of bad photographers calling themselves professional, and it's hard not to feel like you're getting kind of sucked down into the muck a little bit.
You are.
And you're just one of those guys. You're one of those gals. It's like, and like you say, I'm a photographer. Oh, so is my nephew, and so is my dog. You know, and that's a reality we can't change. I think though we have to be careful. Because, you know, it's becoming more apparent to me that those of us that have some experience and perhaps have reasonably, you know, well-established chops in this business, when we try and talk about this, we are so often, we are attacked by not only just newbies and people that we perhaps are kind of pointing our fingers in the direction of a little bit, But all of their friends jump to their defense. Oh, these mean professionals that, oh, they hate all of all you new photographers, and we love you. You're so passionate and so creative. And, you know, and it's almost this cancer that we're kind of part of. And so on one hand, I understand exactly what you're saying, and there is no way to make a logical argument against the case you made in the article. At the same token, I'm still willing to take my shot at being simply better than, demonstrate through my work, through the referrals, through the way people react to the work that we do for them. And I'm just still riding that train. I don't know how much longer I can ride that train, because the sheer frequency and penetration of competitors. I ran across a folder. I was cleaning out a desk drawer, and I found a folder of, and this goes back to about 2002 or 3 in that zip code, kind of my competition folder that I always kept track of. I had brochures. I had marketing postcards. I knew everything there was to know about my competitors in my trade area, and I knew where we stood against them. They knew where they stood against me, and we all, you know, we were competitive, but frankly, we were all a lot more successful and had more business then than any of us do now. Most of them are now out of business.
Right.
And now when somebody asks me, who do you compete with? I don't know. Honestly don't.
Everybody in the world.
Correct. Everybody in the world. So for me, my business is still, you know, senior portraits and some weddings and lots of, you know, high volume, low margin teamwork and work with a bunch of area high schools. And for right now, I'm still the guy, and I'm still, oh, there's Barry. He's the camera guy. He's the photographer guy. And I kind of wish I could break away from that. But if I took your path, I would alienate so much of my base.
I just wonder if there's a transition point where both could really be combined.
Perhaps.
And we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, sure. What? First of all, I mean, just real quick. This idea, we can't cave to this idea that, oh, you hate people because you tell them the truth or because you're opinionated,
right,
or because you value quality.
Right.
And frankly, I see the friends and family. They're not commenting near as much as they used to and interacting and stuff and patting these people on the back. And who can, you know, if somebody pats you on the back, if somebody gives you, honestly, I see, you know, the whole friends and family telling you you're great, it's kind of a line of BS. They don't think it is. They want to support you, and I understand that. But from a business perspective, it means nothing. You know, like, everybody can pat you on the back all day long, but are they buying anything from you? So we all have to address that. I mean, you know, this is not at any level,
right,
of experience. We have to be realistic about that. It's always nice to be encouraged and to have your family value what you do, but your mom is not the same as what clients are feeling.
Right.
So,
well, here's my point. And Mark, I'd be anxious to hear your perspective, because you're, as we talked a little bit off show before we got going, you're in a wonderfully little protected corner of the universe to a degree with the trade that you're involved in, and God bless you. Keep up the good work, you know, don't let anybody figure that out. But, one of the things that I was kind of taken by, I had a phone call Saturday, midday Saturday, and from a colleague of mine that I've known for decades, and I mean, the guy's been doing photography longer than I have, and he's a really, really good photographer. And he called me up to say, what has happened with your senior business this year? Because he has systematically been halving his seniors every year for 5 years in a row. He's spent more money on marketing, he sends more things out, and his business just going half and half. And now this year, I think he did, you know, I think he told me he only did 15 or 20 seniors this year. You know, and so you asked me, you know, where I'm at. Well, I said, well, I mean, our numbers are still okay. They're down a little bit, but our averages are up. So I think we're going to maybe be net okay in the senior market by the time this year is out. But what I asked him, I said, have you talked to any clients to see what it is that you're not offering that they want? And his answer was no. And he's not really, unlike me, he's not connected with lots of schools, teams, and teenagers. So I'm constantly asking all the time, hey, what's going on? What are you hearing? What are you seeing? What do you want? What don't you want? You know, and I mean, I did 4 seniors on Saturday. I was exhausted. It was a long day. It was, every one of them was location. I probably put 150 miles on that day, just driving from this location to that location with this senior and that senior. And it was a long day. Well, I know photographers around here that, you know, haven't done 4 seniors since the 4th of July.
Absolutely.
And so it's a grind right now. And so I am thankful for every client I have, every session I shoot. And the one thing I'm very, very proud about is the fact that I have virtually, it is so rare that I have a retake. Every once in a while, and if it's a retake at all, it's one outfit because I didn't like their hair or, you know, whatever. And that's usually about the extent of it. But that, I think, is a testament to how hard we try to shape the right experience for them and guide them through it and make sure that they enjoy it and have a great thing. And but I don't know how long that can continue. It might, that bottom could fall out any day the way things are going.
Yeah, you just don't know what's happening. And we got to, it's not that I don't hate newbies. I don't hate other photographers. Quite the opposite, in fact. And sometimes people think that I'm harsh or you're harsh or whatever. But we all have to be realistic. We're actually, those of us that are really trying to make it are all in the same boat. And there's no point in like schmoozing ourselves. Like we're dealing with struggles in this industry right now. Mark, what do you have to add to this conversation?
Well, and Gavin, I'd say if anything, you're helping new photographers start because, you know, back when I was still a full-time corporate guy, I listened to your podcast and I learned a lot from that as a newbie and so forth. And some of the things I learned on your show helped me make the jump and helped me make the jump smartly. So,
sure.
You know, I'd go to the mat defending you for helping new photographers get off the ground because
honestly,
helped me.
Yeah, I mean, I try to, you know, I'm not perfect and sure, I get cranky sometimes, but the reality is if I'm saying something and it offends somebody, you know, I'm not saying it to offend them. I'm just saying it because like, hey, this is how it is. This is what we're dealing with. And yeah, this is my opinion. But usually the people that accuse me of that, frankly, they don't really know what I've been doing over the years. And, you know, pretty much everything I come up with, I tell other people about it and they can use it or not. And sometimes they like it and sometimes they don't. But, you know, it is what it is. So, yeah. You know, it's the Pro Photo Show. This is what we talk about on here.
You know, my favorite comment you had about that was I don't remember if it was in the article or if it was in a social media post you made after that. But you commented, you said, you know, in no place in pro sports does a golfer shank one into the water hazard. And everybody goes, great shot, great shot.
You know who said that is Sam Gardner, who recently... he actually prompted me to write this article because he wrote a post on Facebook that said, I'm done and I'm happy to be leaving what's left. I'm happy to be leaving behind what used to be a credible industry is basically what he said. And he's, yep. You know, he's not super old, but he was, you know, been a PPA, lecture speaker. He's a master photographer. I mean, this guy knows his stuff. He taught lighting all over the world. And he just basically said, you know what, I'm not going to play this game anymore. And he, you know, I'm not bailing out on image making, but he kind of prompted me to think about that and write the article. And that quote of his kind of really nailed it. And it's not mean. It's honest. And, you know, people that contact me about portfolio reviews and stuff, I'm like, look, I'm going to tell you the truth. And they're like, yeah, I'm contacting you because that's what I want. And I'm not going to play games with it. But the quote from Sam is, in golf, not a single person exclaims, oh my, what a beautiful shot, when some newbie shanks a crappy slice over a fence.
Yeah, it's
so,
right on the money.
It is. I mean, look, we have to produce quality, and we can't expect to be lauded for not producing quality, and we shouldn't be offended. If somebody says, hey, I don't like that, that's fine. Especially if somebody says, I don't like that because it's wrong in every possible way. Yeah, that stings a bit. And we've all been there. And look at it, take it for what it is and for the credibility and the experience of the person and determine if you're really doing what's right. Because telling yourself you're great is not going to get you anywhere in this industry. The people that actually are really incredible photographers are struggling. So if you think that we can kid ourselves into being successful, we're dreaming with that. I want to connect real quick to this and a follow-up, because a few weeks after this article and this mindset, and it's not like I just came up with this and started making wall portraits. You guys know I've been talking about this for years. But for the first time, I went and had a booth at the county fair for my wall portraits. And that was all. I did not say I was a photographer. I had a sign on the booth that said, Gavin Syme, American Portraitist. I wouldn't say, you know, if people would walk in and say, oh, a photographer, I wouldn't say, no, I'm not, and get offended. But I would leverage the conversation to where I wanted it. People were blown away. People were not, and I'm not kidding. It was exciting. It was invigorating. And we'll see how many of them turn into sales. I'm starting to follow up with them now. And, you know, we had a giveaway. I had about 100 people signed up and a fair number of those actually saying, yes, I want consultations after seeing my prices and knowing that, no, this is not going to be a $100 session. So it was finally, you know, it was the first time in ages I've seen any kind of a marketing thing that really seemed to be producing genuine leads of people who were actually looking to invest in something of quality. And What struck me even more, though, was so many people walking by. There was nothing in this booth less than 24 inches. It was every single one was framed. It was all wall portraits. They were all refined. It was this modular booth that Ken Whitmire designed years ago. It's his style of booth that basically has panels. So it's like a room, and all these panels are like walls, and you have prints hanging on all these walls, even though it fits in this 10 by 10 space. I'll link this in the show notes because there actually is a post I made about it on my portrait blog, and I did a video of the booth just to kind of showcase how it was set up. 24 to 70 inch prints, all framed, all presented, every single one of them lit in this booth, and people would walk in. Probably half of the people walked in and thought they were paintings. They're so not used to seeing photographic work presented in a wall decor kind of fashion. They didn't think they were photos. You know, they would come in. Some people like, oh, a photographer. Most people would just walk by. They would walk in and there was this 50-inch portrait on canvas of a family in the woods of about 30 people. And they thought I painted it. They thought it was a background. People were genuinely, for the first time in a long time, in shock about photographs, you know, and I don't mean they were in shock, like rolling on the floor. I mean, you know, maybe I'm overplaying that a little, but they were genuinely like, wow, that's amazing. How long has it been since we've seen that? I mean, I remember that maybe years ago, but I don't see that very often anymore. And so nothing conveyed that to these people. Here I am always trying to sell wall portraits. My issue is getting people in the door, getting them in the studio, going out to the local county fair. You know, it was a $400 booth, and yeah, you had to be there for a week. It was a lot of work. But the difference between like putting an ad in a magazine or in the newspaper or having a sign on the side of the road, the difference was I was showing a high-end luxury product. I was showing furniture for the wall, and that's exactly how I talked about it. I didn't treat it as photos. But more importantly, I had a nice product, and they were seeing that nice product in its context. We can't convey that on a website.
Yeah, and the proof will be in the proverbial pudding to see how you can convert some of those folks. And it'll be anxious to see down the road how that works.
Well, and I think that's kind of the main crux of, as we talk about new photographers and, you know, shoot and burn photographers and stuff like that. At the end of the day, your best defense against an eroding market is be awesome.
Right.
Yes.
You know, create things that blow people away. Create things that a part-time photographer just can't do. They can't invest the time, the effort, the expense, the marketing, whatever. You will stand out. I mean, there's a certain net number of people that won't appreciate that or value that. You know, there's a great steakhouse in town called Manny's that, you know, you're going to drop a couple $100 when you go there, but it's a theme park for red meat. Okay. You're going to have the steak that's literally, you know, your eyes are going to roll back
steak
in your head
your
when
dreams.
You have that. Well, yeah, exactly. And you know,
furniture for steak.
I value going there once in a while because I know that I can get a steak that's way better than I can actually make. Whereas I took my best friend there and he couldn't get over the price tag and didn't enjoy it as a result, you
right.
know, so people, not everybody values a high quality product to the same level.
Right. But it's all different.
But you know, again, and this is something that I've differentiated myself in my niche. And like Barry talked about, I'm in a pretty small pond in the architectural photography world. And there's actually a remarkably wide spread of services available in that small pond. I mean, there's everything from $50. I'll run around the house with a 60D and just snap, 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 and be out of there in 15 minutes to people that are taking in digital Hasselblads and spending all day to get one room, you know, and everything in between.
Right.
So, again, like, you know, there are people that value that, hey, I just, you know, I don't really value the great, I just need something documented, and that's fine. That's not my market. But, you know, I've carved out a niche where I've delivered amazingly good quality at a reasonable price with exceptional service. And there's always a market for that.
Well, and Mark, what strikes me about you and something that we've been trying to do, not in our portrait work, but in other areas, is you've kind of fleshed that out with doing the cinema work and the video and stuff like that, which has made you more of a unique prospect. You're not just doing video and you're not just doing stills, but you've kind of combined those two. So you're more of a one-stop shop, I think, which in the commercial kind of area has a lot of value.
Well, yeah, and I sort of differentiate myself in that I'm high-impact marketing somewhat more than a photographer. You talk about I'm not a photographer anymore. I'm really considering myself to be part of your marketing team.
Right.
And I'm trying to produce artifacts that assist with your marketing. I'm not just taking pictures of things and so forth. I'm creating marketing materials that you're going to put on anywhere from your web page on up through a billboard or a wrap on the side of your truck or something like that. I mean, this is the face of the work that you do. So
right.
That's what I'm selling, is that I'm helping with making your marketing look amazing. Yeah. And that's a different statement than I'm a photographer.
And whatever we're
well,
in,
and I think
we need to think about how we can differentiate. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's interesting because just about a month ago, I had a company contact me and had me come out to see their site, wanted to basically bid on coming in, doing just a few images around their basic corporate office settings, whatever, and probably kind of business portraits and some sort of lifestyle executive portraits of a handful of people in the building and headshots of another 40 or 50. So it was looking like, you know, probably a full day worth of shooting I would likely be able to bill them for, and kind of talked about that, and that all sounded well and good. And then I, you know, followed up with them, and about a week or two later, I had not heard anything. And so I called my contact, and they, here's what they told me, and I just, about my head just hit the table. They said, oh, yeah, we've been meaning to call you. You know, as you know, this was part of a big marketing project that we were doing, to Mark's point. But our web developer who's doing the project told us we just don't need to waste, air quote, we don't need to waste any money on photography, because he'll just come in and shoot the pictures we need for the whole website. Wow. And it's more of a virtual thing anyway, so we really don't need a photographer at this time.
So Bill in web design literally did do the photography.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, well, and you know.
Because to her point, well, it's just pictures.
That's what we have, one way or the other, whether we take my approach or your approach, we have to get away from that. You cannot make it in a market selling something that nobody values. It's not going to work. So there's not, you know, it's like, Mark, you're taking a different approach because you're not really selling decor for the wall.
It's just a steak. I might as well go get something in the freezer section that's shrink wrap.
We have to find a way to differentiate ourselves. I think for portrait work, it is the wall decor aspect. Mark, you know, you're taking a different approach in the commercial kind of stuff. To round all this off, and this has been interesting, but I suppose we should move on. But there was an interesting article. Mark, I think you just threw a link in there, this article on Petapixel. And it's called The Photography Teacher Nobody Wants. And I saw the headline, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Petapixel did an article about me.
had you seen that article before?
I had seen the article. I saw it last week. I think I tweeted it. And it's really cool because I started reading this, and I'm like, it's such a great title. But you get about, you know, three paragraphs in, and The Photography Teacher Nobody Wants is Experience. And I'm like, boom. And here's a, you know, other people are starting to realize this whole mindset of I own a camera, therefore I am a artist, photographer, whatever. And one way or the other, to make it in this industry, we have to not only know our craft, we have to be able to differentiate ourselves, however that may be. But just having photos, just owning a camera, just having the latest gear, and even just taking good images is not good enough.
Yep. Completely.
Okay.
And you have to be willing to reinvent periodically too.
Yeah, we gotta be flexible and you know, gotta do what we can do. So
But the thing I'll throw in closing on that is I find it fascinating that while those of us that, you know, see jobs potentially slip through our fingers that we know we probably should have gotten, they should have hired us, but they went a different director because the web guy said he can shoot the pictures on his phone. And because the one bride who I lost a year ago that I'm still ticked off about, it was a $3,500 wedding that they chose instead of me, who has experience, that teacher of experience, they chose a photographer who's only shot a few weddings so that photographer and the bride and groom could discover this day together.
Right.
So it's are you serious? You know, it's like,
that's
I mean,
a new one.
I'll tell you what.
But people are going to get wise to this stuff. People are going to start realizing.
Gavin, no, we've been saying that for 3 years. We've been saying people are going to wise up. They're not wising up. They're getting worse. And the last thing I'll say with that is I am absolutely convinced that Pinterest is destroying wedding photography by this simple nature. It is, because here's what's happening. And I have a wedding coming up, well, not coming up, next June that I'm doing. And the bride, you know, right away, she came in and we met, and she pulls up her iPad and she starts showing me page after page after page after page of Pinterest, you know, grabs that she had done. And, oh, right. I love this. And I said, I have a question for you. Are you looking to hire a photographer who can copy anything you find on Pinterest, or are you looking to hire a photographer who can, with you, sort of tell a story and kind of interpret with my vision and my creativity and tell your story in a really creative way for you that's customized to you? And she just looked at me like, oh, I guess I never thought of that. And I just think it's sad because there's a lot of photographers that can benefit by looking at Pinterest. And I've seen some nice images, but Pinterest is also an unfair collection because it's theoretically kind of the best of the best of the best.
Especially the ones that float to the top. Yeah, it's like, exactly, yeah, your wedding's going to look like this for $500, not.
Right, but so it's
and
like.
And I hate to say this, sweetie, but you don't look like that.
Yeah, good point.
Oh, come now. Now, that's a bad thing to say.
So, well, I mean.
But it's some truth. I mean, you look at the best pictures, they do tend, you
I know. Yeah, well, and the thing is, it's like, you can put it nicer. Do you really want to be that person? And she's like, yes. And you're like, okay, well, go to Pinterest then. Well, it's like, how about this? It's half price. If we don't even show up at the wedding, we just take all the Pinterest photos and Photoshop your face in.
I used to sing and play saxophone in a wedding dance band a while, you know, in a bar band and stuff in the past. And, you know, you'd always have some drunk come up and request Freebird. And our standard response to that was, well, tell you what, we'll play a song with a lot of the same notes in it.
I like that.
So that's kind of the Pinterest answer. I'll play you a song with a lot of the same notes in it.
I still contend that I'm seeing people getting more and more tired of cruddy photography, and it's not coming as fast as we had hoped, but things are going to change because the everyone as a photographer mindset is simply not sustainable. It won't last forever, I don't think, but who knows? I never said, Barry, it would end in 3 years. I just said we'll get there eventually. I said, Gavin, maybe, you know, let's look 10 years into the future.
Gavin, my point is that you're absolutely right. It is not sustainable, but with the technology that continues to put out better cameras for less money, small devices, phones that produce a higher quality image, that whole gap is narrowing more and more all the time. Yeah. How would you like to be the guy trying to sell point-and-shoot digital cameras right now? They're a little hard to move, okay?
Yeah.
But with all of that said, you know, the entry ramp just keeps getting easier and easier and easier, so that while it's not sustainable, for every 10 that go out of business who were in business 3 months ago, you know, 20 or 30 come in right behind them.
The
and
interstate
I think that
is more and more congested, but it's getting harder and harder to get through to the exit you need.
Right. Well, people are just bailing, so whatever.
We'll see what happens.
I have an immense amount of respect for you guys trying to do the senior portrait world, because that has got to be the big challenge there is you've got a bunch of people that are, you know, above all trying to be cool.
Yep.
And, you know, when I first started kind of waffled around in a lot of different areas of photography and, you know, looked at that and pretty much very quickly decided that, hey, I'm just not cool enough to do this. You know, I don't have the style sense. I'm just not cool enough to do this. So, you know, the ability to jump in and stay relevant in that market has got to be an unbelievable challenge.
Well,
so
and one,
hats
one
off
of
to
the,
you for doing that.
One of the things that I don't know what to think about it. I put together a very extensive marketing piece for seniors this year, as I did for weddings last year. It's about a 14-page magazine-style thing with lots of images and everything else. I'm fascinated by the fact that the very last page, what did I call it? You know, it's like, tell us about your awesomeness or something, right? And it was basically just a page with a guide for the senior, theoretically, to fill out just some information about them, your favorite song, what do you like to do, that I, as a photographer, again, in theory, would get as they come in and check in their session. I can take a quick glance and get a quick little thing, because I don't get to do a lot of pre-session consultations with the number of seniors we shoot. To date, okay, and I've shot, I don't even know how many seniors I've shot, a lot more than I can count. I mean, I haven't shot 20. I've shot 150 or 200 or whatever I've shot this season so far. Only one senior has filled out that sheet, and that really surprises me. Because it seemed like it was fun, it was funky, it was colorful. It's not like it was homework. It was, you tell us more about yourself, which will help us in turn better create this experience and give you a better deal. One senior, and it was a boy who filled out the sheet for me. That's it.
Well, and what's amazing, too, is in kind of this era of oversharing on Facebook, and we're suddenly being, you know, this level of narcissism is being bred into all of us on social media. I would think that'd be amazingly perfectly targeted at the youth of today. Hey, I'd love for a chance to talk about myself.
Right. So did I. But
that's interesting.
That was, that was a swing and a miss. At least, I mean, it looks good in the it looks good in the marketing material, but I'm surprised that it really hasn't been utilized. So
it's hard. I mean, I think we're finding is it's hard to be relevant anymore.
Well, don't think people care that much. I think
It's not because we don't have something to offer. It's because it's hard to be relevant in an area where people, they don't see the difference. They don't care. And so I don't know. I mean, that's why I was so excited about the fair, because it's, my mind keeps coming back to presentation, because here they saw an actual product that they weren't seeing anywhere else. And the response was night and day different from what I'm getting by people just visiting my website. I know from, you know, people that have been doing it for years that, you know, showing like wall decor or wall portraits at a fair is a working thing. That doesn't mean that anything's going to be easy right now. So we just got to always be looking for ways, I guess, that we can try and differentiate. And differentiating does not mean, oh, look, I changed my bio page to say how amazing I am on my website. I mean, that's that's not going to cut it. So anyway, we've talked a lot about business, the ups, the downs, the highs, the lows, mostly the lows. Let's move on now and talk about my favorite season of the year. And that is, say it with me together, fall.
Fall.
Fall. Fall. Come on, Barry. Aren't you like a singer and you're a cellist? You're like, fall. He's really nice.
I love fall. I try. You know why I love fall? Because the big fish start going.
I love fall because there's something about that. It's just, I call it the twinge. All right. You know how when you're driving down a road in the forest and the sun is setting just right and there's just this basking, bathing, golden, wonderful glow. It's like perfect magic light. It's like the twinge, which is kind of a bad word for it because a twinge is more like a spasm, actually. But you're almost spasming because the light is so beautiful. It's like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. The fall is like everywhere. I've been looking at these images because we're planning a month road trip to finish the Photographics miniseries. I've been looking at Utah and Colorado and all these places we want to go for fall. And the fall color is just, I mean, it just makes me like kind of giddy to get out there. It's been a while since I've done a good road trip in the fall. And fall color, and there's just something about that. The only thing bad about fall, there's only one thing bad about fall, and that's that it's almost winter. Other than that, it's pretty perfect. So with that, let's talk a little bit about fall color, photographing fall, things related to the fall, and kind of shift gears a little bit from the business and wrap up today's show on a high note with just kind of a few fun tips, ideas, or things we're doing this fall, and then we'll have a few picks, and we will call it a night before it gets to be the middle of the night.
I like that concept.
Barry's got tired eyes.
Well, Barry's been working a long day today, and I'd like to get home and get something to eat, you know, at this point.
You got to start taking naps in the middle of the day, Barry. You need a nap room there.
Nap is not an option.
You're not getting any younger. I mean, you need a nap now and then.
All right. Thank you.
We all do. To be fair, we all do. And no, your hair still looks great.
Hey, listen, we'll all sleep when we're dead, so, right now we've got to be a little more productive in the meantime, but... Yeah, I know. I tell you what, I love fall for all those same reasons. And one of the things that I'm intrigued by is we get, no matter what part of the country you live in, it seems like fall is always special. Now, here in the Midwest, our fall can be really, really quick. It can be really, really elongated. We've had years where the colors just slowly but surely, it's like, oh, and then they're gone. We get a windy, rainy couple of days, and we never really get the wow, I try and make a point every year of at least trying to capture a few images. I have an image that I shot last year just driving home, just looking out my window kind of thing. It was just this spectacular little road, and I have this ridiculously great image that I've sold several copies of, but don't ask me, Gavin, which camera I shot it on because you won't like it. I've probably sold 15 copies of this, maple leaves kind of a thing. And I shot it with my iPhone, and it was a beautiful, it was a well executed iPhone shot. It wasn't a point and shoot. I did what I had to do and it was great, but it's a time that I think as photographers, we should get out and shoot some pictures.
Yeah.
Because, as much as we can hate the business of photography, I think we always have to remind ourselves that at the core, we should still like doing this at some level. And if you can't find nice things in the fall to take pictures of, get a different hobby.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, we've planned this road trip. In fact, I just pasted the link into the chat room, and on my end, it seems to have crashed the chat room. I accidentally pasted the long version of this link to this Google map. Anyways, we've got a month trip planned where we're going to hit the road. I mean, we got to finish the photographic series, and I want to finish it on a high note. It's going to be really cool. And you can see what we're up to over there on simeffects.com/photographics. But it's going to be a 4 or 5 hour series on, you know, photography, composition, light, all that kind of stuff. And what better time to do that than fall? So we're going to take off, and we're actually going to head down through Boise, down through Salt Lake, back into Utah, up hopefully into the corner of Colorado, although they've been having some terrible flooding down there. So I don't know. We'll see what happens in Colorado. We're thinking about you know, just kind of taking that as it comes. And fall comes a bit earlier in those Colorado mountains, for sure. So it may be a little
late.
What's that?
I'm going to get this. Yeah, it just doesn't do it justice. We can't quite get there. I'll turn it sideways.
Let me see. Okay, this is Barry's. See? Yeah. So imagine if that had been done on a 4x5 or even a Nikon, Barry.
It would have been great, except I had none of those with me when I drove by that afternoon. So.
But the lesson is not is to have them with me, with you. In the fall, come on, it's the fall. You know what's going to happen.
Well, you know, when you're working 6 and 7 days every, you know, a day in the week, you know, in the fall, it's a little hard to be dragging your camera everywhere you go, but I hear
you. That's nice. Yeah. So there's nothing like it. We're going to head down, and basically, I mean, everybody go out, even if it's only for a few days, go take a fall road trip, get out for a while, enjoy some of that fall color. And we're going to swing down out of Colorado, then down into Utah. Basically, we've planned a trip so that we're going to fall into, you know, down by Yosemite, down by Utah, down in all these areas that are basically in their prime of fall when we're there. So even if we miss one, the idea is that we'll hit the next one and get some spectacular fall color. And everybody should plan a road trip of some kind. So let's get a few fall color tips going, I guess. Let's have some just kind of quick hits and all this experience we have together here. What can you guys give us with getting out into the wild and, you know, not freezing to death, but getting something amazing? Come on.
Well, like Gavin too, I have an extremely busy spring, summer, and yeah, fall is pretty busy in the real estate market too, but I always make a point of hanging the Gone Fishing sign out for just a few days to go out and do a fall colors road trip, because it, you know, it gives me a little bit of artistic juice and, you know, getting out and breathing the clean air. You know, Minnesota in the fall is just absolutely gorgeous, and the Midwest, it's the nicest weather of the year. So, what I've, you know, a couple of things that I find is key this year, I often go to the North Shore above Lake Superior. This year, I think I'm going to actually go to the South Shore and go to like, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and some of the forests in there for fall color trips.
Nice.
So I've got a few tips I could share with you that have been valuable for me. One is, first off, use the web resources in advance, both in terms of location and in terms of timing.
Right.
Because, like Barry said, things change quickly. I mean, what could be peak colors 1 week, 4 days later is brown and down. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, so how do you hit that one? Well, you know, look at your local DNR website. Look at there's always color spotting websites if you're in an area that has that. And you know, I see now our local DNR website is actually saying that this year has the potential to be especially brilliant in the Midwest. So
nice.
You know, that bodes well. And doing that research as far as when things are going to be peak is really important, because just from northern Minnesota to the Twin Cities, there's a nearly a full month different in when the color peaks. It's already peaking on the Canadian border, and it's not going to be for another month till it's down here. So, you know, do your research. Second off, location scouting is also something that can really save you a lot of time. You know, wherever the areas you're looking at, go on 500 pixels, go on Flickr, go on SmugMug, and Google those terms and look to see what kind of pictures people are going there. So you are getting there. So you can, you know, or Google Lake Superior fall or something like that. And that'll save you a ton of time of drive, you know, the hours I've spent driving country roads to find that
well,
spot
yeah.
that nobody's found before. And, you know, I've had much less luck with that than I have just figuring out where the action is.
There's nothing like just getting out there and exploring, but you can have a plan. We have all these resources. It's so easy now. You know, imagine compare it to the way it was 20 years ago. I mean, you can say, hey, let's go up in here. And you can, in moments, you can look at an area and say, hey, I really like that area. That's going to be what I want. You know, I search Colorado, blah, blah, blah. And pretty soon you find something and you're like, wow, that's gorgeous. That area has to be pretty good. And we can narrow it down so much. And not only that, just use, you know, the old-fashioned resources. When I was planning our map for this coming trip, I just got on the phone and I called the chamber in Aspen, Colorado. You know, I called the people in at the park rangers in Yosemite. I called the chamber in Utah and just said, hey, what's happening? What's the fall color looking like? What are we dealing with? When can I expect it to be at its peak? And you know, they tend to be kind of noncommittal because they know that it can be as as volatile as we've seen. But you can get some really good information from that too. And that helped me a lot in planning and kind of organizing, you know, because I got it straight from the horse's mouth of, okay, nothing's happening yet. It's a little late this year. We're probably going to see something, you know, in mid-November or whatever it is. I mean, October, I mean, November's getting pretty late, but you never know.
Well, the thing I guess I would always recommend to people, too, is go with an open mind and be flexible because, you know, you may get to that site even if you scouted it online or you knew of the site. And you had in your mind this picturesque scene that was going to be just spectacular. And you get there, and it's overcast, and it's drizzly, and it's been raining a little bit. And you sit there going, oh, my gosh, this is just such a disappointment. It's not necessarily disappointment. Maybe you shoot differently. Maybe you look at some of the beautiful fall color leaves that maybe have just fallen and that are on the ground by green moss with beautiful water droplets on them, and you're going to do a macro look. Be flexible, because that's the whole key. If you're trying to tap your creative juices, then be creative. Don't try and necessarily walk out there with your iPad and say, well, this is the picture I need to match. I need to quit.
Yeah, don't try and match anything. You know, and don't be afraid to say, you know, gosh, I'm a week early, or I need to come back tomorrow. You know, you need to get those right. Clouds. You know, because I deal with this all the time traveling, and it's gotten to where I really just don't bother most of the time if it's not good. You know, I might take a phone snapshot, not because it's a good photo, but so I have a reference so I can, you know, go back to it later, have the coordinates, et cetera. Right. But, you know, it's getting to the point where you're not going to stand out with anything like this. Don't bother. The other thing that you don't want to do with fall color, don't just go out there and HDR the crud out of it. Because fall color is gorgeous, it's vivid. Yes, you want it saturation, you want those oranges and those reds, but the one way to ruin fall color is to put it into a tone mapping program that crushes everything into the midtones and then crank the saturation up 200%, because it's nothing like that fall color. Fall has this crisp feel to it. You know, it has this color, there's shadow, there's light dancing off these golden leaves.
Well, it's a high contrast color, whereas the HDR is low contrast.
Which is not to say, you know, if you have a high dynamic range scene, you shouldn't do some kind of dynamic range control. You shouldn't bracket. Maybe you should do a tone map HDR, but don't just be cliche with it. You know, don't just go out there and crunch it together and say, look, you know, it's fall, because fall, you know, it's that golden magic that you want to be able to capture in the fall. Anyways.
A couple other gotchas that I'd like to throw out there too. Yeah. Bring your polarizers. Mm. All those leaves have moisture in them, and when you one of the things polarizer does is it eliminates the glare off moisture, and that awesome. Makes your colors a lot more saturated. Plus, it helps separate the nice, you know, the golden tones of the leaves from the blue of the sky, and drives them tonally apart, and that makes it look a lot better. So
real filters.
Bring your polarizer. Second off, I find that When the color forecasts say between 25 and 50% turned, that's your best time to shoot. You won't quite get as much ground coverage, but when you're at 25 to 50%, you get that nice contrast where the sugar maples are red, yet some of the trees are still green, and you just get the whole spread spectrum of things. Whereas when you're in that kind of 75%-ish, pretty much everything's brown at that point, and you got a lot of stuff on the ground. So,
and you want that, yeah. And boy, I've seen some searching around that are just jaw-dropping.
Yeah, 25 to 50% on the leaf forecast is where you want to be.
Awesome. Well, the other thing, you know, the other one might be worth trying is along with that polarizer is a gentle warming filter too. I mean, I know we can do this stuff in post, but sometimes getting those optical filters on the lens, because I do film, I carry a lot of filters, but increasingly, you know, I have adapter rings and stuff, so they fit every single one of my lenses all the way from the digital up to the film. And I use my filters quite a bit. They're amazing. And don't be afraid to throw on that neutral density filter either and do some long exposures with, you know, those golden aspens and the flowing river. You never know what you're going to get out of something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I know Singray makes a warming polarizer, which is just beautiful. And I know a lot of high-end landscape photographers that swear by that particular filter.
Awesome.
It's an expensive filter. You're going to drop $350 on it, but it's amazing. It's top quality optics for sure.
And yeah, I'll have to find that and put it in the show notes. I know I've seen that, and I see the price tag, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a beautiful filter. I know a couple guys that are sponsored by Singray, and they are because they love the product.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Barry, you got any other fall tips for us?
Well, if there's a lake nearby, spend a little time fishing, because like I say, the big fish start going in the fall. They know what's coming.
Nice. Very interesting.
Actually, I, as much as I enjoy tromping around looking for beautiful fall color, to me, nothing beats fishing on a lake in the fall when the colors are just a cacophony of color around you on all the shorelines and all the hills and reflecting in the water and the colors off the,
But you know
better.
What? It's that, you know, we've all seen those, you know, those paintings at Cabela's, you know, it's like the ducks are flying in. There's the golden trail of fall. The sun is setting. Yep. There's the cabin. What you just described is really, it's that feeling and it's that golden fall feeling. So what you need to do is that's what you need to capture all in the photograph is that feeling that you have right there. If you can pull that off, you might be in Cabela's next year.
Well, or it's set the hook.
Barry has two worlds. It's like when he goes out fishing, that's it. Maybe what we need to do is go out fishing with Barry, you know, like 4x5 guy, video guy, and fisher guy. And we can make the ultimate like fishing photography fall documentary miniseries film.
Boat's charged up, ready to go. Let's go.
Very cool.
All right.
Okay, well, let's move into some picks of the week and call it good. And who wants to go first?
I'll go.
Go Bear.
I'm even going to paste it. Let's see. I'll paste in here. I am going to hang on here. All right. I'm a fan of a stand-up desk. I'm standing here at a stand-up desk in my office.
Interesting. Here. Oh, you're standing?
Yes.
Huh, I'm standing. Couldn't tell.
Okay.
Interesting.
If I was sitting, I'd be way, way down low. Which last time I did a podcast here, I was sitting and you could see the pictures. Well, you could see all of that up there because of the angle. But right now it's like, there it is. All right. Well, I'm going to find it. The name of the company is Wall Sprouts. And I'm going to post the link in here if I can find it. Wallsprouts.com. Hang on 1 second because it's spelled kind of funny. And as for those of you regular podcast listeners, our good friend Dennis Zerwas, this is his brother Eric that started this company.
Wow.
And it's a really, there it is. It's a great, they have a whole line of these desks now. It's great. I love it. I never thought I would like a stand-up desk as much as I do. I don't use it, you know, 24 hours a day. Obviously, there are times where I'll sit if I'm doing other things, but it's amazing how good it feels in your back. And I'm a big fan. They're well constructed. He makes them locally. Big fan.
Very cool. So there, I'm trying to, my chat room's fritzing out. What's the website for those? Wall Sprouts. Okay. With a Z.
Yep.
WALLSPROUTZ. Very cool. Okay.
Yep. And, all of the photography you see on Wall Sprouts is by one Dennis Zerwas of DZPix.com.
Cool.
So there you go.
So don't you get tired of standing all the time though? I mean, how does that
No.
work? Don't your feet get tired?
No, not at all. I mean, there are times where if I've been shooting for 3 hours straight, I'll just come and flop down in the chair and do all that. But
it just seems so weird to stand all the time to do your editing. I mean, that just seems odd to me.
Well, it's amazing how it's actually very good for you. It's very healthy for you. There have been a lot of very famous people in the world that have had standing desks. A lot of people that have had back problems. I've never had back problems, but people with back problems often will use standing desks. So there you go. Give it a.
You're liking it, huh? That's cool then.
Yeah. And it's big enough where I have my monitor up here and I have my laptop. I have all my little cords are laying here to plug in when I get here. So it's really easy stuff.
Can't go wrong there. Very cool. Mark, what do you got for us?
You know, this is something I got pretty close after the last podcast we did. I did this in response to the fact that I was doing a lot of, nighttime pool shots where I had to bring in extra lighting and I was spending a lot of time arranging lights and running back to my camera and so forth. So I was looking for a remote for my camera and I ran across this guy, the Camranger. And this thing is awesome. Awesome with a capital A-W-E-S-O-M-E. Capitalize the whole thing. It's fantastic. what it is it's a little box that connects to just about every camera out there. It works with Nikon, works with Canon, works with Sony. You connect it via USB, and then what it does is it not only allows you to control your camera, but it also gives you full live view, both in picture and video mode, to your iPad, iPhone, Android phone, Mac computer, Windows computer, anything. It's a full wireless tether. And I saw the reviews on it were just fives across the board, and I don't know, nothing's that good. And it really is that good. I mean, I would walk around down on the pool deck with my iPad 120 feet away, looking at the live view of where I was moving the lights to, and then just firing a picture, you know, ducking behind a bush and firing the picture without having to go back to my camera. And I could instantly see the result of the shot with all the flashes in there because it would download the thumbnail back to my camera or back to my iPad. And it works absolutely flawlessly. It really is as good as it sounds. So
I've heard you mention this when we were chatting before, so I'm going to have to check this guy out and see.
What does that sell for?
It is, you know, it's not cheap, but for what it is, it's not that expensive. Let me look it up here quick. I think it was about $199, something like that.
Not bad.
Because one of the things that Nikon came out with for the D600, and it's ironically not available for the D800, is a little wireless module that does the exact same thing. I think it cost me $80. It's a little dealy that plugs into the side of your camera, and then there's a free app on your iPhone. And so I have, you know, live view on the phone. It's very similar from how you described it. And boy, has that been handy just a handful of times to use it.
Well, $80 is hard to beat. This one's $299 actually, but it also does, you can also do HDR sequences with that. You can do time lapse with it, and
it does a lot of stuff.
And you can adjust absolutely every setting on the camera remotely from that. So
very cool. Awesome.
Yeah, it's been great. But
in the show notes over at ProPhotoShow.net as well. Okay, I've got a couple things I'll throw out real quick. On the hard drive note, this guy right here, very small. It's the Western Digital My Passport 2 TB. And this guy's pretty cool. I believe there's actually 2 hard drives in here. It's a little thicker than your normal one, but it's still that very small form factor, just USB. It's USB 3, actually. It is reverse compatible, but I went ahead and got a USB 3. I've been trying to upgrade my machines with USB 3 connections and get that faster data transfer, and it is fast. This thing's cool, though, because one thing I deal with when I go these road trips is I have to take quite a bit of work with me, especially doing video and stuff. I need to kind of have this big vault that has all the projects that I'm currently working on, and it gets to be really annoying having a hard drive here and a hard drive there. It's one thing to have a backup hard drive where I can mail it home and have an archive, but this is going to be really cool because it's a 2 TB, very compact, I mean, palm of your hand kind of drive, self-powered off the USB, and it's only like $114 to $120 for a 2 TB compact. I mean, this thing is pretty good deal for what it is. I mean, these guys are coming down in price, of course. And, you know, so it's like each road trip I go out and say, you know, what's the biggest hard drive that I can get now? And this has been pretty cool, working really well. On one other note, and a hard drive related note as well, and I'll post this in the show notes and in the chat room links as well.
I want to make a correction. I just put a link into the little Nikon adapter. It's actually $58.
So it must not do as much as the other one here, then.
Well, read the specs. It's frightening. I've used it. It's great.
what's the model? I'll put this in the show notes too for those that want to compare and check it out.
It's called the WU1B is the one for the D600.
W2. So this is actually a Nikon product.
It's made by Nikon. I put the BH photo link in there. WU1B wireless mobile adapter.
WU1B. So this is definitely more specific. It's not like this is going to work with any.
Oh, no, this is specific to, they make one for the D7000, one for the D600.
Gotcha.
It says you can do remote live view and trigger the camera shutter release. Can you also change all the settings on the camera? Like, can you go in and change white balance, shutter speed?
You can do some changes.
Okay.
I haven't played with it enough to know, but I believe you can do some. And it may have some limitations. It should for $58.
You would think, yeah.
Well, especially for an OEM accessory that's $58. That's actually kind of shocking. I mean, this sounds like something that would be, you know, a $400 accessory. Anyways.
Oh, another thing, too, is I see that it's listed on the range on that's listed as 33 to 49 feet, whereas it's like 150 for the Cam Ranger.
So you're getting what you pay for, but, you know, still both.
But still, that's awesome for the price. No question.
Yeah. One more pick, and also a hard drive related one. You know, we're seeing cameras like my C100. You can get like an Atomos Ninja that'll record to raw hard drives. And frankly, just a lot of data moving around all the time when I'm traveling. You know, I want to send things home so that in case like my everything gets stolen or something, I don't lose all the work I've done. So I'll pack around hard drives and things like that. But this is the Anker U-Speed. It's also a USB 3. Comes with a cable and everything. What it is it's a SATA adapter to USB 3. It plugs into the bottom of a raw hard drive, compact 2.5 hard drive or the full size 3.5 hard drive. You just plug it in and you can connect the hard drive directly to a computer without an enclosure. Really a nice way to deal with a mass storage kind of situation. This thing is like $20 and you just plug it into a hard drive. If it's a 2.5 hard drive, it'll power off the USB, so you can just hook it up and go. If it's a 3.5 hard drive, it takes more power, and it does come with a power adapter to connect that. But a great thing to have around the studio or something, so when you're dealing with raw drives. Another thing that raw drives like this are great for, that a way to connect a raw drive, I mean, at this price, you really should have a way to do this. One thing that can be really valuable, if you have a computer crash, you know, you need to be able to pull off the drive sometimes and access data, which oftentimes, you know, your OS may crash, but that doesn't mean you can't pull data off your hard drive. Something like this, you just plug it into that, pull it out of the computer, plug it into that raw hard drive and transfer data over to another computer. Very simple. And it works. I mean, I got this thing and it works phenomenal. So for $21.99, pretty hard to beat.
Like it.
Yeah, maybe a couple more if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead and throw one or two more out and we'll call it good.
Sure. This one's kind of, there's been a lot of rumors lately. We talked about mirrorless cameras earlier.
Right.
There's been a lot of rumors that Canon's going to be introducing a new version of the EOS M line. That's their small portable mirrorless cameras.
Kind of their foray into the really mirrorless interchangeable lens line, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And the problem with the first iteration of them is that they were really slow to focus and they were really expensive. You know, they were $850 and they focused glacially slow. Well, within the past month or 6 weeks, they've done two things. First off, they've issued firmware, which has sped the focusing up dramatically.
Right.
And they have also dropped the price to $350 as a kit with the lens.
Wow.
So get them while they're still available. It's an awesome little camera. It's yeah, right here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm typing in notes instead of looking at. Oh, there it is, right there. Very cool.
Image stabilized 18 to 55 lens. It's got the same chip in it as the 60D does.
Wow.
So it's still not lightning fast. So like, it's not going to be the greatest camera for chasing your kids around.
Right.
But if you've got something that's relatively still, the image quality is every bit as good as full body crop sensor DSLR out there.
Can you connect EF lenses to it, or does it have to have its own lens?
Yes. They make a $129 adapter that you can put any EF lens on it, and I've seen some pretty ridiculous, you know, take the 100 to 400L and put this on the back of it. It looks like a big lens cap, but
yeah. Is the camera itself sluggish in terms of taking the images, or is it just more of the focus that's an issue?
It's not the fastest camera on the planet. I'll tell you that. But again, first that much quality for $350.
Yeah, that's pretty dang good. Well, most of the mirrorless, you know,
it ain't bad.
A lot higher than that, and I noticed they kind of been nudging down the price. Now you say they're going to be releasing a new version of it. Has that been announced, or is that just kind of a rumor mill kind of thing?
Hotly rumored.
Okay.
You know, being that they cut the price in half, you know, you can only assume that they're trying to cut inventory.
Yeah, that makes sense. Very
so
cool.
Hot rumor, and then just one other last little plug. As we all know, I do a lot of cinematography work for architecture and trying to tell, you know, promotional stories for companies that are in that space.
Sure.
And there's a training company out there. I have no relation to them whatsoever, but I continue to get good information off of them called Still Motion.
Yeah.
And they have their website is stillmotionblog.com, and I think just stillmotion.com. If you're looking for training and information, not only about how to shoot video, but how to tell a great story and make something that's compelling rather than just, you know, videography, go check those guys out. They're really
that's
awesome.
Good stuff.
And what's the name of them?
Still Motion. So
Still
it's
Motion. And I've, yeah, I followed, you know, on and off. I've seen articles and stuff from them for years, and so they've kind of been in this since early on, and they know what they're doing.
And they're really good. They've got a ton of information out there. Yeah, it's not stillmotion.com. Hang on a second here. Yeah, it's stillmotionblog.com.
Yeah, cool.
Very cool. And they've got lots of educational opportunities out there, and if you sign up for their newsletter, they send you a bunch of premium videos. That the information out there is just absolutely spectacular.
It's good stuff, Very cool. We'll check it out. And you know, since you mentioned cinema and video related stuff, because as you know, I've been doing a lot of that as well. Give a quick shout out, not just for cinema, whatever you need it for. I bought a better quality wireless mic for working on film projects. You know, we had those Airline Micros, and they're pretty good, but they have limited range and stuff like that. There's not a lot of options on them. We picked up the Sennheiser EW112, and this mic is really well reviewed. This is a complete wireless system, very small belt pack, doesn't all fit on the ear like the Airline Micro, but gosh, there's so many options. It's got menus, it's got level controls, and the sound quality is just phenomenal out of this thing. It's about a $600 mic, but if you're doing recording of something, especially if you're doing video kind of stuff and you're doing interviews and things like that, check this out. I won't go into a ton of detail other than to say everybody loves this mic. It's a rock solid system. The body of the things are actually made out of metal, and it's a durable mic with tons of options, tons of control, lots of range, and it sounds good. And that's really important if you're doing any kind of video work and getting into that. You want to have good sound. Barry, anything else before we wrap up, or have you kind of picked your way?
I picked my way. I want to get out of here and call it a night. It's been a long day.
Very cool. Well, hey, thank you all for joining us. Of course, you can find the show notes at profotoshow.net. I'll post them up over there. Check out the new Power Workflow 4 at simeffects.com. And, of course, check out the Kickstarter project. I'll link that in the show notes, the Speed Cinema on Kickstarter. And also, keep an eye on my blog at f164.com. We're going to be posting a road trip journal. And follow along with our wrapping up of the new Photographics film. You can also pre-order that at a substantial discount at simeffects.com/photographics. It's going to be good. We're excited about it. It's going to be a fun film, and we've got some work to go out there and do, but we're excited. I don't know if I mentioned this on the last show. I can't remember when this fell. It's been a while since we did a show, but our Exposed series, which is the zones and light and all that kind of stuff, the film we released last year that's done well for us, it won a Hot One Award from Professional Photographers of America in the education category. So check that out over at simeffects.com/exposed. And enough of my plugs. You guys can find me on Twitter at Gavin Syme. Mark, where can they find you?
They can find me either on my website at Mark Teskey Architecture. That's T-E-S-K-E-Y. The key to spelling Teskey is with a K-E-Y.
Cool.
So MarkTeskeyArchitecture.com or Facebook.com/MarkTeskeyArchitecture or Twitter at /MarkTeskey.
Very cool. And Barry, PicturePlace.com. I know you do some cool blog posts occasionally. And
And I've got three or four blog posts. I had one that I was all ready to write to publish, but the dogs called me off. I was a little aggressive, so I'm gonna soften that one a little bit before it goes up.
Come on, just give it to us full force, Barry.
You know, I have some decorum here. But and then on Twitter, I'm fstop95. So
very cool.
And Mark, you and I will have to go out for a steak some night, and then we'll send Gavin lots of pictures from our iPhones of our steak that we'll have. So
yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm in. Yeah. Let me know when.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, you guys. Take care. Thank you all for tuning in, whether live or listening to the podcast feed. We will see you all over on ProPhotoShow.net. And next time, you're on ProPhotoShow. Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Thank you. See you later. Yep. Gotta go.